1.49 at McDonald's gets you a mini Oreo McFlurry. 1.49 on a big night out gets you...
Sorry, no trainers.
McDonald's save a menu. Actually get your money's worth. From 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Welcome back to From the Peak to the Pit. I'm Allie Peak here with TJ Pittinger. And TJ, it is another early Monday morning. We're sitting around my kitchen table. Tell me, what'd you do this weekend?
So we braved the Florida weather and went to Disney on Saturday. And then yesterday we really didn't do anything. But yeah, we had wanted to go to Disney. We had some really good friends that were there, actually down from my work from Jacksonville. And so we took my 13-month-old to Disney, saw Buzz Lightyear and did Toy Story Land, and then we went over to Epcot. My daughter was lured to some of our friends with a margarita. She didn't have any, but she
is your daughter.
Yeah, she definitely wanted that. But it was cool. We, you know, she's young, and you've got little ones too, and little ones on the way, but it's really cool to just kind of, you know, spend a couple hours over there, be so close, and then just come home. So we had a good time at Disney, came home and watched football. Not as good of a time there, which we'll get into soon enough, but a really good weekend. And like I said, now bright and early Monday morning before we get our week started, talking college football and everything else. How was your weekend?
It was good. We had our baby shower, which we talked about last episode, happened to be right in the middle of the Florida-South Carolina game. So I listened to the South Carolina game on the drive to the baby shower because it was like 30 minutes from here. And it was almost halftime when I went inside, and so I didn't ask at the moment to put the game on because I was like, you know, there's 60 seconds until they go into halftime, so I'll ask after halftime. And honestly, I was so bombarded with talking to people and whatever that I never got around to asking, so I watched none of Florida's game, which I think has to be the first time that has happened. I honestly can't remember the last time that I didn't watch a down of Florida's game on Saturday. It may not have ever happened. I'm not sure. It's been a very long time if it did happen. So a little disappointed that I didn't get to see it, but I have since caught up on it, and, you know, a win's a win. So
caught up on the comeback, the complaining from a former Florida coach,
yes,
and a couple of other things. So now that you're caught up, I actually listened to Mick Hubert, shout out Big Three Roll-Up alumni, call the first couple of quarters of the game on the way to Disney, because we live a good hour and a half away. And so now that you're caught up, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the win?
Well, Mick was pretty upset about that PI flag that ended up getting picked up. I want to say that was like the beginning of the second quarter.
Yeah. That's just atrocious.
Well, the best is that he was saying that the call was atrocious, but then the makeup was even atrocious.
He said, this call is even worse. And I, forgive me, who's the guy that commentates with him?
He is a kid that played with my dad. Let me think. It'll come to me.
Mick was like, well, the picking it up's even worse, you know. And the guy said, well, but it worked out in our favor. And Mick's like, well, yeah, that's true. Mick was just upset with just the whole play situation, everything.
That seemed to be kind of a theme of the game, is that both teams were upset about the officiating to begin, you know, for the entire game. Gator fans were upset. It seemed like more in the first half. South Carolina fans were upset. There was a holding call, I guess it didn't get called, that South Carolina fans really felt like should have been called. You know, my husband Eric was saying that he feels like Gator fans would have been equally upset had it been called, and so that means it probably was the right call not to make it. But Will Muschamp, after the game, his press conference, hysterical. If you have not seen the little clip about Will Muschamp talking about the officiating, Google it, go on YouTube, find it. But he, I guess he's irate about something during the game, probably that non-holding call. And he loses it on the refs, which is not really uncommon for Will Muschamp, although this season he kind of looks like the angry librarian when he does it, which I fully...
The glasses are great.
It kills me. It ages him like 20 years, but there's something about it that just works for him in my mind. But so he loses it on the ref. Well, the ref walks basically like halfway down the field and then throws a flag on Muschamp, which makes Muschamp just... livid. And so in this press conference, he's talking about how, like, if you're going to throw a personal flag on me, do it at my feet. You know, be man enough to stand right in front of me and tell me. And the reporters are like, well, did you say something to him? And he's like, well, yeah. And they're like, well, did it warrant a flag? He's like, well, that's not for me to judge, but if you are going to flag me, flag me. And then at the very end, he goes, gutless.
Yeah.
Just like getting that one more dig in.
It's so interesting, too, because, you know, one of my biggest issues with officials and referees in different sports, I hate, you know, in the MLB or baseball or whatever, when the umpires and the coaches go back and forth. Like, the umpire is not there to argue with the coach.
Right.
That kind of, I understand that goes back, but that just has kind of always kind of annoyed me. But most officials like to show up the coach. They, you know, you think about the NBA, they like to throw them out right in their face.
Right.
You know, the refs love to, when they're throwing a 15-yard penalty on a coach, love to throw the flag up higher than the third deck, and then it falls, you know, so dramatic. So for the ref to run away and then throw it is kind of gutless. Well, like, come on, make the spectacle.
Steps away that you take is how many you think you need to avoid this coach beating your ass if it comes to that. And Will Muschamp is one of those ones that I actually would go 40 yards away because I think Will Muschamp could probably take him in a fist fight. I don't know that maybe you have that same feeling with some of these other coaches on the sidelines.
Yeah, if it's Willie Taggart, you're just throwing, you're hitting him in the head. With
right.
It. Like, he's never shown emotion in his life. So,
right.
But yeah, some of the videos and the gifts that came out of the Will Muschamp at UF era, and then really here at South Carolina too, are just fantastic. Cool. Like, he wears it on his sleeve, on his face, on every part of it that he has.
You know, and for Will Muschamp, I know Will Muschamp. My brother played for him at Florida. He played for Urban Meyer for 2 years and Will Muschamp for 3 years. And we really, really, really like Will as a person. My brother would take a bullet for him to this day. And you'll find that most of his former players feel the same way. I've heard Ahmad Black from Stadium and Gale say some things, too. And, I mean, he was a stud under Urban Meyer as well. And so you could see where there could potentially be some favoritism there. But he loves Muschamp. And I think that outbursts like that are almost part of why his players love him, because they feel like he's going to go to bat for them. He's going to stand up for what they think is right. And I don't know. I think his fiery personality works for him. At least it does in my mind.
I mean, it's college football, right? Like, we are, you know, by definition, a fan is a fanatic. And,
right.
You know, you're going to want, or you want your coach to have that same thing. I mean, I can remember back in 2016 when that chop block was called on FSU and really negated a huge, huge play against Clemson. I mean, Jimbo went off.
Right.
And, you know, cost us 15 more yards, but, you know, we're all cheering. Yeah, go get him, Jimbo. You're like, you know, go kick his butt or whatever you're doing, you know.
Right.
So.
But I think the flip side of that is somebody like Pruitt, where during like the Tennessee-Alabama game this week, and he's grabbing players by their face masks. And I don't know, I think that's the kind of emotion that helps you either A, lose your team, or B, gives your team a pass to lose it themselves.
Yeah, there's,
which I think we saw.
There's certainly a fine line.
It's got to be, if you're going to show emotion on the sidelines or in the press conference, it's got to be in defense of your players only. If you're going to rip your players, it's something that needs to happen behind closed doors. It's something that happens in college football. So I'm not knocking Pruitt saying that, like, oh, how dare he talk to his players like that. Like, I'm realistic about what goes on in college football. And if you think that he's the only coach that does stuff like that, then, you know, you clearly didn't play college sports. But I do think that it can really damage your team's psyche for stuff like that to happen in public during the game, where it gets caught on camera, where people talk about it and whatever else. It's one of those things that needs to happen behind closed doors.
Yeah. So on the game, so South Carolina went into the fourth quarter with the lead.
And then Florida scores 21 unanswered.
Yeah. So South Carolina looked, I don't want to say they were dominating the game because it was just a three-point lead, but they looked to be just as much in control of the game that Florida did. Like, there was no clear, I mean, it looked like it was going to be decided in the fourth, but it looked like a coin flip. Like, it didn't look like either team had control of the game. And then the fourth quarter came around and Florida just looked infinitesimally better. But like
the fourth quarter of the LSU game, Florida has been insanely dominant in the fourth quarter of this season. I mean, insanely dominant. And so I don't know. I think Gator fans maybe have a little bit of a different feeling about the fourth quarter this year than they have the several years prior to that. If Florida had been down by 6 points going in the fourth quarter in the McElwain era, or even a lot of time in the Muschamp era, that number feels insurmountable to those fans in that moment. I don't think that Florida fans get that feeling this year at all, which is a nice change to not feel like your game is over when you're down by 6 points. I think the weather plays a factor in that. Generally, Florida teams are teams that want to play in poor weather. You know, Florida hasn't had a prolific offense in a decade, and so the concept that, okay, we can just run the ball and eat up this clock is generally something that Florida would be looking to do. But since Florida hasn't really been able to establish a running game, I think that probably factored in there. But, you know, the difference between this team and previous teams is that they find a way to get it done. You know, it might not be pretty. It might not be what the original game plan was. But Florida has found a way to win. And at the end of the day, they have that W. And, you know, that's all that really matters, right?
For sure. Yeah, you go on the road and beat a team by, I mean, they won by 11, but South Carolina scored really late to kind of make that a little closer. I mean, in dominating that fourth quarter, I mean, they were blowing them out. I mean, the game was not in question halfway through the fourth quarter, or maybe a little bit before that. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you win a game on the road. Vegas had the spread really close, 5.5, 6 points. You know, you more than double the spread. You win convincingly in a sloppy game. You score 38 points.
With your program too, yeah. Which I do think, I mean, it's not a rivalry. I had this conversation with some people on Twitter actually this week, about whether or not Florida South Carolina is a rivalry. And I don't think it's a rivalry, but I think that it means more to both programs than a lot of SEC games do. Mm-hmm. And some of that has to do with, you know, Florida needing a blocked field goal to send them to the national championship game in 2006. I think a lot of it has to do with South Carolina just really not liking the fact that Spurrier was always a Gator, even when he coached there. And so I think maybe it's more from the South Carolina end than it is from the Florida end. But, I mean, It's a decently tough place to play. You walked out with a win with terrible weather, with a quarterback who, you know, Trask has gotten better every single week, but he has had some fumbling issues. He's had, you know what I mean? Like there's football protection in general for Florida's offense has been something they've struggled with a little bit this year. You add that wet weather in, you don't know what's going to happen. So, I mean, we'll take it.
For sure. Now Florida gets the bye week and then couple of weeks to prepare for UGA, who we'll get into a little bit later. So the other side of the state, actually the other side of the Carolinas as well, is where this one happened. Did you get home in time? Did you see any of the Florida State Wake Forest game?
Oh, I did. I watched the Florida State Wake Forest game.
Biggest smile I've seen all morning. So, little tougher there. So Florida State comes out. Wake Forest drives the ball really, really well. Three or four drives in a row, can't get in the end zone, settles for field goals. Florida State takes the lead going into halftime by 2 because Wake can't finish drives. You
insane
know, like,
in the red zone. Wake Forest was terrible.
And it didn't look, and I'm certainly pessimistic about the way that Florida State's, you know, looked the last several years. But really, objectively, it didn't look like Florida State was really doing anything special inside the red zone.
Right.
You think a lot of times about that bend, don't break defense. Mm-hmm. That's not what it looked like at all. It really looked like Wake Forest got ultra conservative, stopped doing what they were doing to get down the field. And I know that when the field shrinks, it's harder to score. I get all of that. but they stopped doing the things that made them successful.
Right.
When they got into the red zone and especially inside the 10-yard line. And so, you know, some credit due absolutely to Florida State's defense for bowing up and getting stops. Because at the end of the day, you know, you can't just say it's all on the offense for playing poorly or all on the defense. So, you know, but Wake Forest really should have had between 20 and 28 points going to the half. I mean, they're not going to score touchdowns every single drive.
Right.
But they got inside the 10-yard line three times and came away with field goals. Got inside the red zone another time and came away with a field goal. And so Florida State probably should have been trailing at the half. They weren't. I mean, credit to them.
14-12, right?
14-12 after four field goals. Obviously, if just one of those field goals is a touchdown,
it's already a different game.
They lead. But then came out in the second half. I mean, Florida State has to be the worst Power 5 team when it comes to halftime adjustments.
It is insane.
We don't make any.
And they are the worst second half.
It's awful. And I think I don't know. I saw somebody on Twitter say that we don't have to make halftime adjustments because we're the team that's leading. And it's just like, that's not accurate at all. Like, that's just that you're leading, but it's kind of like fake, you know.
But even if you're leading, you're needing to anticipate that they're going
in. The defense is going to make adjustments.
Halftime adjustments.
Which they really didn't. Like, we just, you know, kind of the second half starts. You know, Cam Akers was absolutely dominating and just putting the team on his back, running wild and breaking tackles and pulling off spin moves and everything else, just, you know, looks, I mean, he's head and shoulders better than anybody else that played.
He was a man amongst boys on the field out there.
That played that night. You know, we went away from him a couple of times, kind of strangely. He did put the ball on the ground once in a play that maybe seals the game, or a drive that maybe steals the game to go up two scores there, because Wake's offense wasn't doing a ton.
Right.
Anyway, you know, he fumbled, so that's obviously on him, but you know, when you hand the guy the ball 30 times,
well, yeah, the more you touch the ball, the odds increase that something is going to happen that's not favorable.
In a nasty weather game, it's really hard to put too much blame on him again because he's the only reason we were in it anyway.
Right.
Some kind of weird play calling stuff. I mean, there's some kind of rumors circulating that Taggart may have taken play calling back. I mean, who kind of knows what's the truth there? Hopefully that's asked today in the press conference. Today again is Monday, so recording this before that happens, but I would hope our beat writers, if they're reporting on that being
or
a possibility,
asking the right questions.
Ask that question, you know, and we may get a coach speak answer back. He may lie,
totally,
he may, you know,
Riles,
but,
which would not be
out
of the norm for him this season.
One way or the other, you have to ask that if you're reporting that it might be a possibility. If he has taken play calling back, that's absolutely asinine and, you know, is just kind of a, in my opinion, another fireable offense, which we'll get into that later. But anyway, Florida State comes out, a few minutes left in the game, ices their own kicker, misses a 50-yard field goal.
Florida State loses in the most Florida State way possible this season. Like, I mean, every loss is... Most losses are pretty much like unexplainable. It's literally like
it's the
you
weirdest
did it to
thing.
Yourself.
You know the old cliche like snatching
victory
from the jaws
of
defeat.
We
snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It's really amazing.
Well,
it was a fourth and six, and we and people say, oh, we took the timeout because, you know, the play clock was running down. Well, they did get the snap off, so the timeout came in as that was happening. So the snap would have gotten off anyway.
Right.
Everybody was kind of in their normal, you know, rotation. Who knows if I think Aguayo misses it anyway. He's not been very good. Nasty conditions. 50 yards. I mean, he's still a college kicker. So, but then you take the timeout, which cost us 40 seconds at the end.
Right.
You know, so whether or not he makes the kick, we'd have had a minute and a half left.
Well,
which
and
is
when
an
you
eternity.
See what actually happened at the very end of the game, you know that those 40 seconds, especially when you don't have the timeout because you called it, and then you also don't have the 40 seconds,
and so you're rushed,
you called it.
And the end of the game
and
happens
then two
like
bad
it happens.
Snaps in a row, which that I was just like, are you kidding me?
I don't know that there's a better two plays to sum up
Florida State season.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the Willie Taggart era in. those two plays, they weren't even upsetting, right? Like, because I didn't expect to go down and score with 30 seconds to go. What were going to attempt?
Least give yourself a shot. Man,
it was just totally laughable.
I mean, Wake Forest didn't even need to be on the field.
We couldn't even hold the ball.
It was wet there as well. Right?
Absolutely.
The weather was not great.
Sounds like we didn't practice for wet weather, which is a quote.
That is in chapter 2 of coaching along with the hydration. So if Willie hasn't gotten there yet, I mean, can you really blame him?
Yeah. So tropical storm coming at the Carolinas, and we didn't practice for wet weather. But it's just another moment in the saga that is this Florida State experiment that we've got going on. And so Florida State drops one, moves them to 3-4.
So we talked last week about how this was kind of one of those gut check games for Florida State where it could predict their season, that we felt like if they win, and we felt like they were capable, and Wake Forest is a good team, so I don't want to make it like this was supposed to be a gimme game. I did think that Florida State would win, but I do think that Wake Forest is one of the more difficult teams in the ACC this season. But so how does that change your outlook, knowing that you were thinking that this was going to kick off kind of, you know, a little bit of a winning streak for y'all?
So, I mean, I think if you just look at it game by game, well, let me back up. It really depends on a couple of things. Is the message in the locker room, has it gone stale? Do the players respond? Are they still invested? Are they still bought in?
Right. I'd like to know what the message is, just in general.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. So the most fortunate thing for Florida State at this point is that they play a terrible Syracuse team. And as bad as Florida State has been, as terrible as we've looked, they're a 10.5-point favorite this weekend at home against Syracuse. So Vegas is not often wrong, gets things right a lot. The line started out at Wake Forest, or the line up until right before kickoff was Wake Forest minus 1.5. They won by 2 this weekend. I'm not saying that Vegas is perfect, but
they've got
Florida State winning comfortably this weekend. Nothing would shock us, but I do think that Florida State is somewhat fortunate in the fact that they play a really bad Syracuse team this week. And I think I would be absolutely shocked if they lose. I think if Taggart's the coach on Saturday and we lose that game, he is no longer the coach. I think they will make a move after that game on Sunday or Monday. So I think that, again, to answer your question, I think Florida State's fortunate that they are probably going to get to 4-4 this weekend. Then they play a bad Miami team who we'll get into in just a second. So I think Wake is better than both of those teams. I think Miami is more talented than Wake, but they've got a really good opportunity to get back above 500 these next 2 weeks, go 5-4. And then if they do that, they finish out the schedule with Boston College, Alabama State, and Florida. I don't think they beat Alabama State, but I do think they, I'm sorry, I don't think they beat,
really?
I don't think they beat Florida, but I do think they beat Alabama State. And then that BC game's a coin flip because BC kind of looked good this weekend. We play them for that red bandana game. So again, it's, are the players still invested? Do they still care? Do they feel like they have something to prove? You know, guys like Cam Akers and Marvin Wilson aren't going to give up. So I think we beat Syracuse and maybe kind of get back on the path to 6-6, 7-5. But yeah, just really discouraging because if they beat Wake on Saturday, you know, I think they have a chance to finish 8-4. You know, I think they, you know, 7-5 at worst. And now it's kind of like probably 6-6, 7-5 at best. But yeah, that was a really, really bad loss for just kind of the trajectory this season, you know.
So what are you, you know, you said if Taggart's the coach on Saturday, are you thinking that there's a possibility he won't?
As more and more time, you know, I really felt strongly yesterday that there was going to be a chance at some changes. I don't have some kind of elite sources or anything like that, but it just kind of, you know, things were just really quiet. I really think that was just one of those unacceptable losses.
Right.
I had heard things that, you know, if we would have lost to Louisville, they were going to make they were going to consider making changes. Well, we beat Louisville, beat NC State, get blown out by Clemson, and then lose again to Wake Forest. in another game where he had some very questionable decisions. Again, he didn't fumble the ball. He didn't, you know, who knows what the truth is with the play calling, whether he really did take that over or not. Again, hopefully that's asked. I think that as time goes, like if something was going to happen, it probably was going to happen yesterday. But I think that, you know, if it gets to like noon or 2 o'clock, like if he does the press conference, he's here because, you know, we have a game to prepare for on Saturday. They're not going to do something on Thursday afternoon.
Well, that's not fair. You're already putting the players in a precarious position. And I'll tell you, so when my husband, Eric Wilbur, was playing for Florida, Ron Zook was fired midseason. Mm-hmm. All right. And it was after the Mississippi State game. And this was a really precarious situation for me to be in because my godfather was a trustee for UF at the time. So he called me after the Florida Mississippi State game from the plane, the private plane that he had taken up there, and told me that they were going back to fire Ron Zook. So I knew, but I wasn't allowed to say anything to Eric. And so they fired him on Sunday, even though the decision was made on the plane on the way home on Saturday night. And they had a team press conference, or a team meeting scheduled for like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, which was a little bit before they had to report for meetings. I don't know what time UF practices right now, but UF would practice like 3 to 6 at that point. They'd need to come at like, you know, 2 or whatever. Anyway, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, breaks on ESPN, and it's on the bottom of the ticker, UF fires Ron Zook. Players hadn't even gotten the text message to show up for a team meeting yet. So they don't know if this is real, if it's not. And, it, you know, Eric had a very contentious relationship with Ron Zook, I'll say. I loved Ron Zook, but he dragged Eric across the field by his face mask, you know, multiple times. Eric almost transferred to Miami during his time with Ron Zook. So not, you know,
imagine these cute little girls you have walking around in orange and green. How gross that
is. You know, well, those were the two. Miami and Florida is where he had it down to before he finally picked Florida when he was in high school as well. And, you know, they had Larry Coker and they just won a national championship. Yeah. So it was a pretty.
He made the right call.
Yeah, I mean, our senior year, Miami didn't go to a bowl game. Oof. And we won a national championship. So just imagine. But. Anyway, if there was a player that would have potentially been kind of pumped that Ron Zook was not there, Eric would have been one of those people that it might have been. But he was pissed because it's still your coach. At the end of the day, you can fight within your family, but anybody else messes with your family and it's over. And so that is something that has to be taken into consideration when it happens mid-season, because players, whether or not, even if they know it's the right move for the program, it's like losing a family member.
For sure.
And it makes it really difficult.
So what are your thoughts? You know, Florida State's never been through this. I mean, never in my lifetime, never in yours, where we're firing a coach, right? Like Bobby was kind of exited out, Jimbo left. We are, you know, if things change and we run the table, or if we finish 7-5, win a bowl game, I mean, I think he's going to get another year, right? Like, if we beat every team on our schedule minus Florida, I think we're fine. If we get embarrassed by Florida and lose by 40, which very likely could happen, you know, I think there's some question. But I will say that I think there's a path to 2020. But if we go 6-6, I think he's gone. Like, I don't think he wins. You've been through this with a couple of recent coaches. I think there are pros and cons to not only this, but just everything in life. Talk about UF firing Muschamp at the end of the year and saying, like, hey, he's going to coach out these last two games. He coached out the 2014 game in Tallahassee against Florida State, and then that was well known. They had made it public and made it clear that was going to be his last game. And then with the next coach, with McElwain, they fired him midseason after the Georgia game, correct? Like, mm-hmm. It kind of started a leak. And it's, if Taggart goes, like, it's going to leak before they can tell anybody. Right. Just because social media and information and stuff is so much more prevalent now than it even was back in, what, 05 when Zook was let go? And so, or 04? When Zook was let go?
It was the 04 season.
Yeah. So, does it make more sense to wait to the end of the year? Does it make, and I have some thoughts on as well, but does it make more sense to wait to the end of the year? Is it better to just cut your losses now? You know, what are your thoughts there?
I honestly, so three times that I've been through this recently. With Ron Zook, I don't feel like Ron Zook had lost the locker room. So I do think, in theory, you could have waited until the end of the year and it wouldn't have been any more detrimental. However, they knew that they wanted to go after Urban Meyer, and they knew that that was something that was going to have to happen very, very quickly, because he was such a hot name that a lot of programs were going to be going after, Notre Dame most notably. So I think that that was done because they knew who they wanted, more than that Ron Zook had really lost the locker room. And, you know, it happened after a Mississippi State loss, and that's not the Mississippi State that, you know, we saw Dan Mullen coach to 10 wins, and it was a bad Mississippi State team, and that was during the time period where nobody good in the SEC was losing to Mississippi State. That was, that would be if Florida State went to Syracuse and lost, kind of thing. And so I think that's why that happened. It was going to happen either way, no matter what. There wasn't a chance they were bringing Ron Zook back for a fourth year. So they felt like we might as well get the Band-Aid off and try and get the coach that we really think we want in position. And if you remember, UF's president was Matchin at that point, who had come from Utah and was familiar with Urban Meyer. So really, Urban Meyer was his guy as opposed to Jeremy Foley's guy. And this plan was, you know, already starting to take place for who they wanted. With Muschamp had not lost the locker room. And I think there was actually some debate as whether or not he should be given even more time. And truly, I think had Muschamp been given a couple of more years at UF, maybe gotten the right offensive coordinator in place, I think the Charlie Weiss hire is what really sealed Will Muschamp's fate. I think that he thought in his mind, Charlie Weiss is your offensive coordinator. Are you kidding me? Which is the same thing that most Gator fans thought at first. I think maybe that doesn't happen and he starts with somebody else. Will Muschamp maybe still is the coach at UF. I'm glad things worked out the way they did, because I think Dan Mullen is the right guy for the job. But Muschamp's not fired and is allowed to coach the remaining games, even though, once he is fired. And that's because that locker room believed in him 100%.
Yeah.
I don't know if McElwain ever actually had Florida's locker room, but he sure as heck didn't have it by the time he was fired, which is why I think that fire happened when it did. And I see some similarities between the McElwain little era at Florida and Willie Taggart, in that neither one of them takes personal responsibility very often in their press conferences. And I think that is kind of the dagger in the heart for both of those programs, is that even if it's not your fault at all, even if you had a great game plan and your players didn't execute, even if your coaches went against what you said and called something different, you are the head coach. You're the person making millions of dollars. You stand up in the press conference and you say, I have to do better. It's my program. I have to do better. And neither one of those coaches do that.
Have ever done that, yeah. And at the same time, you can take credit for the good things. I mean, you know, if Kendall Riles or any of your coaches make mistakes or do things wrong, at the end of the day, that was your hire. You know,
right.
Nobody says like, oh, well, he did something poor, and so that's only, I mean, like, you made that hire. So,
right.
Yeah, so I agree. So here's my kind of thoughts or take on it. I care less about, and not that I don't care about the players or whatever, but at the end of the day, I care less, this sounds terrible, about the specific players and their thoughts and where the locker room is than I just do the program in general, right? Because those players are going to be gone very soon anyway. I guess my thought would be, you know, you look at Florida letting Muschamp, well, it's a little bit different because they announced that Muschamp was going to finish out the year. Like, Muschamp was fired 3 weeks before the Florida State game, and so they could begin that search.
Right.
My question or my thought is, if Florida State waits until Thanksgiving weekend to let Taggart go after losing to Florida by 30 in the Swamp, where does that put us in a national coaching search, because I think other coaches are going to get fired. I think the USC job is going to come open. I think there's a great chance the Auburn job comes open. I think there are other places around the country that are also going to move on from their coaches, and I don't want to be the last one again. You see the benefit that UF had by letting McElwain go. They were able to jump on Mullen and get him before anybody else. Other places were considering Mullen. And so, I not that he may have taken those or not, but that's kind of where I see it. I don't think Taggart's the guy at Florida State. I think this is just a kind of another nail in the coffin. And I think that I just don't want to wait too long and then just get some other scrub at the end of a coaching search. Once the carousel has already happened and then we kind of get in too late.
Right. Well, and I mean, I understand that point of view as well. And I think we look at things from different perspectives, which is part of why these conversations end up being interesting. But I am the granddaughter, the daughter, the wife, the sister of Florida football players. And so I do tend to look at things from what's going on. Yeah.
I sound like I hate all the players right now. Like, I don't mean it. Like, no, it's probably what's best for them too, if we're being honest.
I understand what you're saying for sure. I think you have to take into account, so these players are going to talk to recruits that come the rest of the year. So if they're unhappy with the way that the administration is handling things or the athletic department as a whole, they're not going to be your very best recruiters. And so if they feel like this coach got a fair shake and it didn't work out, that's a very different attitude coming from them than, man, our man got screwed, or they quit on our guy or whatever. I think the amount of time that you're at a program matters some too. So we're talking about, we're a season and a half into Willie Taggart's tenure, which in general, I would say, is not enough time. I don't know that I agree with that statement in terms of how it relates to Willie Taggart, because there's been some things that have made me feel like it's probably never getting any better, and so you might as well strike when the iron is hot. But in general, I do believe that coaches should get those 4 to 5 years to get their own players in and see what happens. For me, Florida State's cupboard wasn't bare. It's the same concept as Urban Meyer walking in with Ron Zook's players. The cupboard wasn't bare.
Right. They just need a leader.
They need a leader. They need some direction. You can argue that Dan Mullen walked into a way more bare cupboard than Willie Taggart walked into. And recruiting class rankings would agree with that statement. And I think, you know, seeing what he has done in the exact same amount of time does make that spotlight hot. But I do think at least it matters what is going on in the locker room at least a little bit. I get what you're saying. And if Florida State has somebody that they in the back of their mind that they know they want, then that makes a difference for me too. Because then you might as well just
hopefully pull the trigger. Urban.
You are crazy.
So yeah, no, that's a good point too. Ultimately, and I don't want to sound like I just don't care about the players or whatever. Right. I just think that's my main priority,
because
at the end of the day. It's probably what's best for those players too, whether they realize it or not.
Sure.
And I'm kind of with you on that. Like, I really think that in a general sense, a college football coach, or really any coach at any level, you know, deserves 3 to 4 years to really get it going and figure it out. And a big argument that people have is, well, if we fire Taggart now, you know, the next guy is going to have to come in and clean up Taggart's mess. And is he going to be able to do that? And so a really legitimate question is, do you have more confidence in Taggart cleaning up his mess than someone else off the street?
Right.
And at this point, I have more confidence in my 13-month-old to clean up Taggart's mess than I do Taggart. And, you know, again, you said this last episode, he is the easiest guy in the world to root for. Like, you want to root for people that, you know, I'm the biggest Florida State fan I know. So I would love to be the coach of Florida State. I wouldn't know what I was doing. It'd probably look
but
a lot like this.
The idea
but
of somebody
yes,
who
like,
is a Seminole.
Is, grew up a Knoll, has always wanted to coach it. Like, that's just one of those college football stories that, like, you see him in a press conference in 20 years, or I'm sorry, like an interview in 20 years talking about how they won it all, and this has been his dream, and he always wanted to coach at Florida State. Now he's reached that mountaintop, and
it's the same concept of Will Muschamp talking about playing football in his backyard in Gainesville, pretending to be You know, Chris Collingsworth and stuff, which is stuff that he'd said. And those, it does make it easy to root for him.
But you can't just
train wreck.
Yeah, you there have to be results. Somebody, my buddy Patrick, tweeted.
Well, it's starting to affect recruiting, which means it's not going to get better.
Had a decommitment this weekend, and then had two really big visits scheduled for next weekend or this weekend.
Right?
They canceled, and so now it is affecting recruiting. I am hoping that the decommit that happened over the weekend does not open up the floodgates. But it's hard to think that it doesn't. You know, if I'm a kid, I don't want to go play for this train wreck. My buddy Patrick tweeted, Florida State's top 10 wins under Willie Taggart.
I saw this.
And he could only list 1 through 8. Because over a season and a half, we've got 8 wins total.
Right.
2 of those against FCS opponents. So,
Well, and there's a lot of high school players that are looking at it, not even so much for the, we're not sure if we want to play for Willie Taggart, but we don't know who we're committing to play for.
Yeah, will that coach even be here?
Yeah. Right.
So from one side of the coaching to the other, again, this is such a play on words, but really from the pit to the peak this way. I texted you this yesterday. Is Dan Mullen a top 5 coach in college football right now?
I think you have to say yes.
I am trying to rack my brain. And I think if we did, and share your feedback on this if you're listening and you think we're idiots, or if Allie's a homer, or if I'm just like a secret gator, or just whatever. But,
all of the above.
Yeah. So my top 5 coaches in college football this season. So I'm not taking into account Jimbo's national championship. I'm not taking into account anything else that anybody else has done. Here's my top 5. Saban's number 1. I think Lincoln Riley's number 2 right now, but I mean, I'm fine putting him and Dabo right there at 2 and 3. You know, I'll go Saban, Riley, Sweeney for this season, and I think Mullen's number 4. What he's been able to do against a very tough schedule is just continue to win. I mean, obviously they dropped the game in Baton Rouge. Very impressive. I hate that I'm about to say this in this PC 2019 culture, but a very impressive loss.
That quality loss.
Yeah, I got that quality loss under their belt.
That concept too. And that score is not indicative of that game.
The game was much closer. If Trask doesn't throw a pick down 7 in the red zone, maybe inside the 10, I don't know where it was exactly. But
2 times they walked away without points in the red zone,
so,
one being from an interception through into the end zone.
And that's the game, right? Like, they made less plays than LSU did. So LSU deserved the win. I don't think we're arguing that.
But the game
was much closer. So, I mean, Mullen has just been fantastic. I mean, playing with a backup quarterback, again, coming
major
off of a good D-line season.
Injuries.
Coming off of a good secondary injuries. Guys going to the draft last year.
The best offensive weapon that Florida had. He's been out for weeks.
Coming off of, I mean, they had a good season last year, but 2 years removed from a 4-win season, a regime change, everything else that was going on.
4 wins to 10 wins is pretty impressive with the same roster.
Yeah. And Florida has, again, I hate to say this, Florida has the best loss in the country right now. A night game loss to LSU.
Right.
A close game. The voters, the people in, you know, everything else know kind of what that game looked like.
And it's evidenced by the national media not giving Florida any respect until that loss. You know, when they beat, we talked about this last week, they beat Auburn, and it's that Auburn wasn't that good. Florida still didn't get any real credit. And so I think you can, it says a lot about LSU as well, but, you know, that Florida didn't get credit for being a good team until that close loss, because the unbiased person that watches that game knows, one, how good that LSU team is, 2, how good that Florida team played that LSU team.
Yeah. So I think Mullen's a top 5 coach. I think he's number 4 in my book.
He's done more with less than the others on your list.
Thank you, Siri. I agree. And so then to round out the top 5, I think you probably have an argument between like Orgeron, James Franklin, PJ Fleck right now, you know, Brian Kelly's sitting at 7-1.
I think Brian Kelly's out for me, because I think you can, no matter what, every season predict a loss for Notre Dame against a, and they have a pretty mild schedule most right. years. It depends on how Michigan and USC are doing. You know, and every once in a while they get a game like Georgia scheduled on their roster. So maybe, or excuse me, on their schedule. So maybe this year's slightly tougher than normal, but I don't feel like Notre Dame has that intimidating of a schedule in right. general, and you can count on at least one loss every single year. And so,
to be fair, you can count on one loss for almost every team.
I understand that.
But I agree, I'm fine with him not being Notre Dame.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that I think he's top five. He could be. There's an argument for top 10 for sure, but top five, I don't know. But you mentioned earlier. To me before we started taping, does Ryan Day fit up into there? And I think that if this is 2 years from now, Ryan Day may very well be on this list. But this is a guy who took over an Urban Meyer team that was, you know, just has ridiculous amounts of talent in it and doesn't change the system very much at all. And so I think this kind of, yes, he is winning with Urban Meyer's players and Urban Meyer's scheme. And if 2 years from now they're still winning like this, then it's Ryan Day's players and Ryan Day's team. I don't know if he gets to count yet.
Not that this would put him in the top five, but how much credit does he get for bringing Fields in?
I mean, I think he gets...
Because without Fields, are they the same team?
Does he get the credit for bringing Fields in, or does Kirby Smart get smacked upside the head for going with Fromm instead of Fields?
That's a great question. Yeah, so that moves Kirby out of the top 10. He's not even close.
I think we talked about this last week. Kirby is potentially the best recruiter in the country. I think he is a very mediocre game day coach.
Yeah,
and I think that we saw some of that on Saturday, you know, as well, which we'll get into in a little bit. But I don't think Kirby gets to be a part of this conversation at all.
I agree. I mean, I do think recruiting is part of coaching, and so it's not fair to separate it.
Right.
You know, people say, oh, well, Jimbo only won because he had a loaded roster. Well, who got that loaded roster to Tallahassee?
Well, I was going to say, if that's the case, then Saban doesn't make the list either.
Jimbo's the one that got Jameis and Dalvin and DeMarcus Walker and Jalen Ramsey to commit. So you can't take that away from him. But I agree. Like, there's a difference. We talked about last week. There's a difference between the guys that are, you know, that on-field coaching is still more impressive than
it is. But if you handicapped yourself in recruiting and then overcame it by on-the-field coaching, like, do you get more credit? Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think Dan Mullen in this circumstance gets credit right now because he's playing with somebody else's players.
And he's recruiting well, too.
Decently. I think that needs to, you know, step up a tick, and I think that it will. I think that it's one of those chicken or the egg things, like how do you get the big name guys here if they're not sure if you're going to win or not? So you got to win with the guys that are, you know, mainly 3 and 4 star guys, as opposed to Florida doesn't have a single 5-star on the roster currently. Besides their head coach, which apparently X's and O's is overtaking Jimmy's and Joe's in terms of,
I love the cliches today,
you know, getting those W's. But you know, I think Coach O is maybe who you put in there. What LSU has been able to do, and maybe you only do it because you got Brady in there. You know, at the very least, that's his coaching win, because this is not the same LSU offense that we saw last year. I mean, my team sees LSU every single year. I can't remember the last time we've seen an LSU offense like this.
Man, you know, I know we're a couple of weeks away from it. We've got a couple of other things to get to. But speaking of that LSU, I cannot wait for that LSU Notre Dame game. I'm sorry, LSU-Alabama game.
When is that game happening? Yeah. LSU-Alabama. And, of course, they both have a bye going into it, which, honestly, it's very difficult for me to ever pick against Saban no matter what. It's even more ridiculous for me to contemplate picking against him when he has 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah. And at home.
But I do think that this is LSU's best shot at winning in a long time.
Yeah, and that I can remember.
Yeah. I mean,
Well, because, you know, for years, remember the SEC was so much on defense, right?
Right.
The defense in the SEC is, to me, just... Not that it's not good. There's still so much talent there. But they've followed the trend of the rest of college football in that... Our defenses are certainly not Big 12 level or anything like that, but they're not elite anymore, and the elite teams in the SEC have moved to an offense.
Then we have LSU Alabama games that are like 6-3, and people bitch about how nobody plays offense in the SEC. So it's one of those things where it's almost like the conference can't win.
Oh yeah, for
now
sure.
Now they do have some offenses, and everyone's like,
"Oh, their defense is terrible."
That conference is really just on par with everybody else. Look at how many points they're scoring on each other, and it's like, okay, well, what do you
want? For years, though. LSU tried to out Bama Bama, right?
Right.
Like they tried to have Fournette, great defenses,
right.
And you just couldn't do that. You just
right.
could not.
Well,
and now
LSU, to be fair, has always had great defenses.
Right.
But yes, I understand what.
And now they're still going to try to out Bama Bama because Bama's all offense this year too.
Well,
but it's a different kind of.
So is Tua back for that game though?
I'm sure he will
so
be, but if he's not, LSU wins.
So he's having another. He had either had another yesterday, or he's about to have it today, another ankle procedure, which is an interesting, I mean, I don't know exactly what the timetable is from that. I'm sure we'll get it from the press conference later today. And again, this is being taped Monday morning, so we haven't gotten those updates yet. But I mean, that makes a huge difference. And they that Tennessee-Alabama game showed some flaws in Alabama.
For sure. And so supposedly, again, we're recording this pretty early on Monday morning. Supposedly he's eyeing a November 9th return, which is the day of the game,
right.
Of course. You know, they're not going to say anything but that.
Right.
But, yeah, if he's hobbled or obviously if he doesn't play, it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. Because, I mean, if he doesn't play, I don't think – I think LSU could go in as a favorite, you
know,
into Tuscaloosa.
10 of 14 SEC schools have lost their starting quarterback this season?
I gotta up that strength and conditioning.
That's
actually an
insane
stat.
Right?
Yeah, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Right.
You know, that's insane. Nobody in a better position than Florida with their backup,
which no one would have predicted
that would have potentially. Well, Florida's fans, you know, hearts kind of sank. Remember when Trask went down against.
Right.
Auburn and had to go to the locker room. I mean,
right.
Emory came in and did a good job getting 3 points on that first mm-hmm. drive. But, that stat of 10 of 14 is just insane. Keeping it in the SEC, Florida's next opponent, UGA struggles again. I mean, granted, they did shut out Kentucky. I don't think the game was ever really in question. But
I mean, when they go into halftime 0-0 at the very least, Georgia fans, given what they'd watched the week before, have to be a little...
What the hell is going on?
Well, and Fromm was 9 of 12 for 35 yards. And look, I get it. It was raining. It was raining all over the Southeast, though. He's not the only quarterback that had to play in tropical storm weather.
He's just... I think he's just overhyped, you know? I think he does things well enough. He manages the game well enough.
He's one of those four original starters left. Think about that. Think about the position Georgia should be in offensively versus the rest of the league because they are one of the lucky four that haven't lost their starting quarterback.
I bet they wish they would have and Fields was still here because look how he's lining up. But... Yeah, I mean, I said last week, I really think that's kind of an aberration. Like, they're not going to play that poorly. They're going to get up for Florida.
And they won't play that poorly against Florida, but...
I mean, your true colors are who you are,
yeah.
You know? And I do think they'll play better against UF. I think they'll get up for it. I think that, you know, coming off of a letdown of the undefeated season and everything like that against South Carolina, maybe it's not too in bad weather. I mean, Florida didn't look super great their first half either.
Right.
So, you know, I think they also played a better opponent. Kentucky and South Carolina, I guess, are kind of similar. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that Georgia is kind of who they are. Now, they do get 2 weeks off to prepare. I don't know how much that matters, you know, on their side, just because I don't think that – you know, Coley and Smart and these guys are Saban and Grant. I'm sorry, Mullen and Grantham and things like that. But they do get 2 weeks to prepare, rest up. But I don't know. I will get more into that game next week for sure. But I think I'd like Florida to win that game.
I think that Florida wins that game. Now, I don't – anybody that thinks that, okay, looking at Georgia the last 2 weeks, that Florida's going to win like 40-0 or something ridiculous like that, Georgia's going to play Florida hard. It's going to be – at the most a 14-point swing, in my opinion, and it's probably closer than that. Wow. I don't. This is a major rivalry game. This is basically to decide the SEC. Missouri dropped a game to Vanderbilt this past weekend, and they still have to play both Georgia and Florida. And so, truly, this is it. This is the East, unless something wild and crazy happens afterwards. And Georgia knows that, and Florida knows that. The 2 weeks off, I do tend to think it favors Florida because I do think that Mullen is a better preparation and game day coach.
Florida's got more guys that need to get healthy as well.
Well, and so that could be a huge thing. There's potential for Florida to get back Zuniga, Grenard, and Tony. We haven't seen Kadarius Tony since like the third game of the season, and he is actually Florida's best offensive weapon.
Besides Mullen.
So, right. So, the idea that in theory they get all three of those guys back
would be huge.
Is huge. I don't think we'll have an NCAA decision on Britton Cox, but in the possibility that in the next 2 weeks the NCAA decides that he is immediately eligible, that's another huge shot in the arm for Florida. It's crazy to me that we haven't heard anything on that yet because, like, shouldn't there be a window of time to determine if someone's immediately eligible if you've used the whole season?
It just speaks to the NCAA's incompetence. You know, why are some decisions made right away? Why some are much slower? I mean, I know what it is. It's ratings and money and everything else.
It is crazy, though, right? I mean, you know, we're talking about
Fields immediately and, you know, Tate here and there, you know, why are some things...
If he gets cleared, the first game that he would be able to play in because of where Florida's buy-in is week 10 of the regular season.
At that point, is it worth it? Yeah, right. You know, I mean, he could, certainly play.
I mean, Florida, Florida plays him against Georgia because, one, he came from Georgia, two, their defense needs all the help they can get, so I'm not going to say they're not going to play him, but, like, is that even fair to this guy?
Absolutely not. At this point, I think once you've reached this far in the year, you know, there's no point in even, you know,
continuing to
let him play next year. Auburn looked really good. They played Arkansas, who I think Arkansas is the worst team in the SEC.
Agreed.
But Bo looked better. The team looked better.
Wasn't it Nix versus Hicks? I think Arkansas was quarterback.
Yeah. So Auburn looked better. They've got a big win against LSU this weekend.
Big game.
Against LSU. Do you think they'll test LSU at all?
I don't, but you know, they opened as a 9-point dog to LSU. You know, Florida opened as a 14.5-point dog to LSU, which I find interesting that Vegas is giving more respect to Auburn than they did to Florida against LSU.
So my first thought there is LSU has the bye next week before Bama, but it is the game before Bama.
Mm-hmm.
My second thought as to why that spread is a little bit different is because I think Auburn's defense is what Vegas is riding on there, right? Like, they think LSU wins. They think LSU wins convincingly. But I think that Vegas thought in a shootout game where Florida and LSU are going to score points, will take LSU bigger. I think they just think Auburn's defense will keep them in it, but I don't think Auburn covers that spread. I don't think they will.
No, I don't think Auburn covers that spread either.
And the other thing is LSU's defense isn't very good, and so Nix may play. I think Nix will play better against LSU than he did against Florida.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the very least, he has he couldn't get much worse. One. Two, he does have that big game experience under his belt now moving forward. But I just thought that was interesting.
I think LSU wins,
though. I want to say, wasn't Auburn a 9-point favorite over Florida? And then obviously Florida covered that spread.
I think it was three. Auburn was a 3-point favorite.
I don't know. I thought it was more than that. I'll look that up. But I don't know. I just thought that was interesting that somebody that Florida beat, it's goes to show you how there really isn't any of that transitive property in college football like we like to talk about. Well, so-and-so beat so-and-so, so that means so-and-so
we should win this by this much.
Which, speaking of that, actually, I do have a question for you, TJ.
Oh, goodness.
So, Twitter this week, actually, let me back up for 1 second. Anybody that follows me on Twitter knows that UCF fans despise me. And that's probably using like a really nice word.
Allie's like the nicest person that I know. So,
well, you guys are. That comes from. So, I've been covering UCF football probably longer than a lot of UCF football fans have been UCF football fans. I used to do a radio show.
Longer than 2 years?
Right.
3 years, sorry.
Right. I did a radio show for a few years, morning drive time in Orlando. And so it covered everything, but UCF obviously was one of the things that it covered. It was when O'Leary was the head coach. It was well before they've had the recent success that they've had. And I used to always get accused of not liking UCF. And for me, at that point, it wasn't that I didn't like UCF. It's that I felt like being located where they were with the opportunity to reach the kind of recruits that the state of Florida just has in mass and the potential for resources that UCF had, that their program should be better.
Yeah.
And UCF fans will probably never admit this, but clearly I was right because look what they have since done with those resources, with the recruits from the state of Florida. But anyway, I have some banter with UCF fans on a regular basis. They're convinced.
It's the only way to get Allie to reply to you on Twitter.
Is if you, not true.
She is such an elitist that she will not respond to anything else.
I do get called an elitist a lot, actually, an SEC elitist by these UCF fans.
And but if you talk UCF, she's all about it.
And the thing is this, is that I think that their UCF should get a lot of respect for a lot of the things that they've done. I think that two undefeated regular seasons is an incredibly difficult feat, regardless of what conference that you're in.
Yeah, because respective to your conference, I mean, you have the same talent level.
Right, because you have the same talent level as your conference. And if it was easy, more people would do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not something that happens on a regular basis at all. I think where UCF lost me was the whole national championship thing. And also that I think that a lot of UCF fans, one, think college football was invented 2.5 years ago. I can't tell you how many people tweet me and say, well, going back from 2017, if you look at these statistics, since when does comparing 2.5 years of anything make any logical sense? If you told me, let's go back 10 years, even if you told me, let's go back 5 years, those, I can wrap my brain around comparing stats in that way. Just arbitrarily throwing me 2.5 years because that's what fits your argument is not something that's going to sway me much. But, okay, so that's one of the things that bothers me. The other thing that bothers me is I think there's a huge difference between getting up for one huge game than playing that type of talent week in and week out. It is a different thing. And so,
especially in a bowl game, which bowl games to me mean absolutely nothing unless it's a playoff.
Well, and here's the thing. I know that UCF fans hate when people talk about, like, well, Auburn didn't really want to play, or LSU wasn't hyped up, or you know, or whatever. There are two different types of teams that go into bowl season every year. There are the teams that are at a bowl that they didn't think they were capable of making at the beginning of the season, so therefore it becomes their playoff game, their Super Bowl, their national championship, and it's easy to get that team up for those games because it means something and it validates their season. For instance, Florida last year making a New Year's Day Bowl, that was a national championship-like moment for that team. The team won 4 games the year before.
But and on the same token, a blue blood, the most wins in college football history, Michigan was disappointed to be in that game. They had just got – if they beat Ohio State, which they got blown out, so it wasn't even close. But if they beat Ohio State, they're in the playoff.
Correct.
So they went – and not to take away from Florida's win or anything like that, but if – I mean, Michigan didn't want to be there. Michigan
Correct.
Was playing Florida for, what, the 4th time in how many years? They
Correct.
Should, in their minds, they should, I'm using
have
air quotes,
been
have been in the
in
national,
the national
I'm sorry, in the playoff.
Sure.
You know, so it every bowl game is like that. Unless you're looking at, like, the 6-6 bowl games at the beginning
of
December.
Nobody had any playoff
like,
aspirations
right.
or whatever.
Those
anybody.
Bowl games are usually, you know, pretty good.
More
but
equal.
The bigger bowl games, there's a team that's upset now. And there's a team that feels like, I kind of thought it was the same.
That's a negative side effect that of this playoff that mm-hmm. we're seeing. Because before,
more teams feel like they have a chance.
Correct. And you know, and before when we were voting on this by polls or even the BCS standings or whatever else, everybody felt like if I'm really impressive in my bowl game, that's going to help where I finish. And that's not the case anymore unless you're in the playoffs. And so that for that fifth team, that sixth team on the outside looking in, it does something to you, to your psyche. My brother on the 2012 Florida team, where they basically just barely missed a shot at a national championship. They lost to Alabama in the SEC championship game. Had they won that, they are in the national title game. They played Louisville. That entire week leading up, that Gator team was on Bourbon Street till 6 o'clock in the morning. I think the game was played on what, like a Saturday? On Monday, my brother was like, "Oh, we're going to be killed. We're literally going to get killed." So if you, but UCF,
and that was. I mean, Louisville had Teddy Bridgewater at that point, but that was their Super Bowl.
Getting to play
a blue blood in college football. I mean, it's the same thing when Florida State played Houston in 2016. Right. I mean, they were that upstart fun team. Florida State didn't want to be there. They were coming off of playing, or 2015, they were coming off of being in the playoff the year before, the national champs the year before that. They didn't want to play Houston.
Well, and when it's a bowl game that pits somebody like a Louisville or a Florida or a Florida State and a Houston,
or back to UCF
Auburn, a UCF LSU, that team that is that blue blood, not only are they disappointed that they're not in that championship conversation that they could have been the week prior, there's also a large part of them that doesn't want to play the team that they're playing because they're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. Yeah. If they win, they don't get
any respect. That's what you were
supposed
to do. You were supposed to beat them. And if you lose,
you're god awful.
Which, to somewhat of the UCF fans' argument, that is what makes their scheduling so tough.
It is. It makes UCF scheduling so hard.
Nobody wants to play them. I totally get it. I mean, that sucks. But
it does. And I'm not one of those people that says something like UCF should join a bigger conference. I think that's the stupidest argument and it's literally only an argument you'll find on Twitter.
Right.
I think it's ridiculous because clearly if UCF was getting an invite to the Big 12
they're
or
not
somebody
turning
else,
that down.
Right. As soon as that happens, they're jumping.
Yeah.
And as they should. And I'm not even one of those people that thinks that they wouldn't do well there. I think that UCF could beat many Power 5 teams, and I think they could hang with even more than that, but it doesn't change.
Especially once those resources and that money came in and things like that.
That TV money.
There'd be a little bit.
Changes things.
I think you put UCF in the Big 12 next year, I think they struggle and go something like 6-6, right? Like just, you know, well, depending on how they schedule out of conference, maybe they go 7-5. There may be a step back, right? Like they're going to lose to Oklahoma, they're going to lose to Texas, they're going to lose to Baylor, they're probably going to drop one somewhere else along their way. They're going to have 4 or 5 losses. But they'll take a step back and then 2 or 3 years down the road take a step back up. And I think be competitive. I think be 8-4, 9-3. They're never going to compete with Oklahoma, but neither is anybody else in the Big 12. So that's not really fair.
Well,
you know,
the recruiting ability for the state of Florida is so much better than what the Big 12 has in any other individual state outside of probably Texas. So that's going to be an advantage to UCF eventually. It takes the money getting in, the facilities improving, but the recruits will come when they join a big conference. And that's another thing that UCF gets upset about. I had somebody tell me, like, well, where do we need to improve our talent? Everywhere.
Yeah.
Jimmy's and Joe's matter. They ranked, I want to say, like maybe 63rd last year in recruiting class. There's 62 teams in Power 5 conferences.
Right. So they're right on that cusp.
Right on that cusp. But that money does make a huge difference. It's the difference between a $3 million renovation to your weight room and a $155 million renovation to your weight room.
Just did. Yeah. So all of this UCF to say this. How would, I mean, and this is what you would ask me,
yeah,
right?
This is the question. Sorry, that was a long lead up.
How do you want to ask it?
Yeah.
Do you want me to answer
it? So a UCF fan tweeted an ESPN statistician.
And you tagged me on it.
But, well, no. Ask the question of the ESPN statistician. Tagged me hoping he'd get an answer and probably hoping that I would not be correct with my answer.
Just delete your account.
He said essentially UCF and UF played the exact same LSU team and UF lost by more. So what would the line be on UCF Florida if they played this year?
So obviously the logic is terribly flawed. If we even wanted to entertain the logic, we're excluding the fact that UCF got to play them on a neutral field. Florida had to play them in Baton Rouge at night, the toughest situation that anyone could have as far as a road game goes. Also, you're excluding a lot of other factors. It's not the same exact team. But even if we were to take all of that flawed logic into account and assume that it was correct, also taking out the factors of the bowl game and who's motivated and who's not motivated in those situations, you know, the question is completely off base. But the answer to the question, if Florida and UCF were to play on a neutral field this Saturday, Florida would be a 17-point favorite, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's about.
I think maybe 14 because it's a neutral field. I think they'd be. I think it'd be between 14 and 20, depending on where the game was. You play the game at UCF, maybe it's closer to like 12, 13. You play at Florida, it's probably closer to like 17, 18. And you play neutral, it's somewhere around two touchdowns, maybe a little bit more.
You know, part of my argument was Florida beat LSU last year.
Yeah.
This is not the same LSU team that it was last year. And his argument was, well, they got better over the course of the year.
Well, which so did LSU.
Well, no, that LSU, that's what he's saying, that LSU better Florida in their bowl game than they would have been in October. But LSU was one way healthier in October. So maybe Burrow's improved as a quarterback and understanding the system from October to January. You could potentially sell me on that. But LSU was missing a lot of their defensive starters that all played against Florida.
And he's asking this question about the spread, about the same UCF team that lost to Pitt and lost to Cincy, and that's the question that he's asking.
Right.
A closer spread, and I am not going to take my team here, but a closer spread would be, what would UCF's line be in Tallahassee?
Well, it is of course that would be a closer spread.
I think UCF in Tallahassee right now, Florida State kicks off as a 3-point favorite.
Yeah.
Solely because the game's in Tallahassee. And UCF very well may cover that and upset, you know, looking at the disaster that Florida State is right now. But they're not anywhere close to UF.
Well, and, you know, I think UCF, so they had Stanford on their schedule this year, which when you make these schedules 5 years out, you have no idea that the team might be terrible by the time you play them. I did have UCF people tell me last year that even if Florida scheduled them, how would they know that Florida would help their strength of schedule? Well, the odds that the Florida team you schedule 5 years out helps your strength of schedule are way higher than UCF helping Florida's 5 years out. But
sure.
I digress. So I went to that Stanford game. And again, UCF has no idea that when they scheduled Stanford was in a New Year's Day bowl that year. I mean, they were a great team. But so my cousin plays for Stanford, and I went and I watched. And after the game, I waited to say hi to him, and I saw the size of these Stanford players. And I've spent a lot of time around college football players because I'm married to one and I'm related to a lot of them and stuff. And I was really surprised at how small Stanford's players seemed compared to the SEC players that I'm used to standing next to. And so I think that would also be a little bit of a wake-up call to this UCF team to actually stand on the same field as some of these big teams in college football, because Stanford, at least this year, size-wise, isn't that at all.
Yeah, and you never apologize for who you play, right? Like, I've learned that from Chris Landry, who does a lot of shows on our Big Three Roll-Up Network. You don't apologize for who you play for. And UCF made a really, really good effort to schedule well.
And we talked about why it's hard for them to do that. And it's not their fault. There's not a lot of upside to scheduling them for the other team.
And I don't know when they scheduled Pitt, but I mean, if it was 4 to 5 years ago, Pitt's been an average to above average ACC team. That's a very good scheduled game for UCF as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for Pitt and Stanford in the same year, that's a good schedule.
Yeah.
And it just kind of turns out that Stanford isn't very good, as evidenced by them getting blown out the other night.
By UCLA, who's also not very good.
Right? And then a Pitt team who is playing well, but is only like a 4-point favorite against Miami this weekend, you know, who Miami's terrible. So,
right.
You know, you
But again, not on UCF. You don't know these things when you schedule these teams 5 years out. And they're looking for teams that are going to give them a home and home. And we can, a different show, discuss the thoughts between a home and home versus a 2-1 or a neutral or whatever else. But that they're taking what they can get, and you can't knock them for that. And you can't knock them for the conference that they're in, because again, if they could be in a bigger conference, and when the opportunity comes, they'll jump. So none of that is on UCF. I think that the national, I don't know, disdain for them really does come from
their fans.
Their fans. And maybe not fully understanding, or maybe it's not even understanding, it's more accepting kind of the way that college football functions.
Yeah. You remember in 2013 and 14, really even 15, FSU fans were insufferable, like on Twitter and social media and stuff like that. Like, we got ranked the worst fan base by every publication that put that stuff out, but it was because we were winning, right? Like, it's the same reason you don't like Patriots fans and Yankees fans and just whomever, right? And Duke fans, which are also Florida State fans. But, you know, it's for the same reasons. And UCF was winning, but it just hit a different level, right? Like, Florida State fans were insufferable because they were at the mountaintop. And UCF fans were at
first time of the year, Georgia fans this year were that way for me.
UCF fans were at their mountaintop, which they wanted to exalt above.
They wanted it to be everyone's mountaintop.
Right.
And wasn't
that's what makes
mountaintop.
It insufferable. And so, you know, stats are so deceiving. UCF fans are so great at pulling out stats. None of them are like the FPI stuff, like the opponent adjusted stats.
Also, but none of them include the 0-12 season from 3 years ago.
Right. So, you know, stats are misleading. Things like that are misleading. And so they're so good at crafting arguments, though, right? Like, well, if you take out third downs and you look at just positive plays on second and long, you know, we rank better than UF does in this scenario, right?
Right.
Or we're better than Alabama is if you count every time that there's been a 1st and 5, we convert that better. You know, so it's just so, you know, very out there stats and stuff like that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they're just kind of insufferable. They kind of, you know, there's no logic. There's no reasoning. There's no like, oh, okay, well, we can come to this middle ground, right? It's just kind of this extreme.
Well, it's what happens when you discovered college football a couple of years ago. But I honestly have started to kind of feel bad for UCF the last couple of weeks, because you've seen so many people jump off the bandwagon, which is not how college football is supposed to work. It's not how the programs that have been around for a bajillion years work. They've lost 2 games. If they were to finish 10-2, which is entirely possible, that's a hell of a season. You don't go undefeated. Well, of course you would. You don't go undefeated every year. You don't. And so if whether or not your stands are filled or your fans wear their UCF gear during the week has to do with whether or not you're undefeated, that's not a good place to be in. And that's not fair to real UCF fans who, you know, have been there from the 70s and who are pumped at the progression that has happened. And truly, even just from when we were in college, my husband is from Orlando, and so a lot of guys that he played high school ball for played for UCF. And so it was something that we, you know, followed incredibly closely. And to see where they've come from that point in time to now is incredibly impressive. And I think that you can be proud of that, but if you thought that that's what was going to continue for always, that's just silly.
Yeah. So we'll wrap up with this. From the embarrassment on social media to the embarrassment on the field, the only thing that makes me feel better about Florida State right now is how bad Miami is. They are, and we could very well go out and lose that game to Miami in 2 weeks. Don't get me wrong, but Miami is so atrocious. They are so bad. They were 18-point favorites against Georgia Tech at home. I know that game was on. Actually, was that game on it? No, it was at noon at the same time. So I don't know if you caught any of the highlights or anything.
I did not, no. You know, I've watched them since, but I didn't watch it live.
Yeah, Georgia Tech scores on a fumble in the end zone by N'Kosi Perry to go up 7-0. Miami responds. Georgia Tech then ties the game up with a fake punt. So they really kind of were in the game because of a couple of, you know, crazy out there plays, you know, kind of crazy plays that are not normal. But then they got to halftime tied, right? Like they went into halftime tied up with Miami. I think that caused Miami to clinch up. I think that they didn't play loose. I don't think they're very good anyway. And ended up, you know, missing a couple of really short field goals. Had one blocked, had three inside the 35, missed completely. Got into overtime. Ended up losing to the worst team in the ACC, Georgia Tech. Miami may be the worst team in the ACC. From a talent perspective, they're probably the third best team, but they are a bigger crap show than Florida State is. Again, it's the only redeeming part of this season. Our biggest rival is a top, I mean, in my opinion, a top 5-10 team without question, has a top 5 coach, is going to beat our brains in. My team is terrible, but at least Clemson's going to go to the playoff. Like, everything that could go wrong for us this year is, and at least I have Miami to make fun of and laugh at as well, because they're terrible.
That does make it a little bit easier to swallow, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts on this? It's not the exact mirror image, but how much worse was Florida's 2013 4-8 season since Florida State was just the absolute world
beater? It was bad.
Like it makes it worse. It like does. If Florida State goes 7-6 that year,
it's easier.
And you lose by 5, you're just like, nah, bad year for the state.
And like we talked about last week, that's part of what I think magnifies Willie's situation and Diaz's situation is that Mullen is new too. And I think you could argue that Florida and Miami probably had a similar amount of talent when those two coaches came in. I think you can argue that Florida State had more talent than either team.
I'd agree with that.
When Taggart took over. And so that does make it harder to swallow when you were watching your rival succeed, but not only succeed, but succeed when they were in the same or worse starting point that mm-hmm. you were at. At the very least, when Florida was having their 4-win season, it wasn't that Florida State had just hired a brand new coach that completely turned the program around. Fisher had been a part of
and doing
that
well.
Florida State program. And Florida State wasn't, there was no like huge drop off of that. Then he just shot him back up to success.
Right.
It is. It's hard to swallow. It's hard to watch the teams that you love to hate
do well. And so,
if Florida State drops that Miami game, you think Taggart's then just fired on the plane? Like they just leave him on the tarmac?
Home game, so I mean, although it's a home game when we play down there too. So,
watching the fans in the stands for the Miami game this past week was interesting. I saw some
of the Twitter videos where they're like beating seats and stuff like that.
Yeah, talking about people jumping off bandwagon.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, nobody does it quite like them.
Twitter recruits.
Twitter has been quiet. We started a new little big group chat app called Discord. There have been like 2 Miami fans in there with the hundreds of FSU and UF fans, and so nobody decommits from a fan base and a team quite like Miami fans and recruits.
And watching their alumni is really interesting too, because their former players are more vocal than probably any fan base that I can think of either. And once they've turned on you.
Oh, it's done. I think Taggart's fate is sealed again, minus some kind of a weird turnaround this year. But I certainly think Diaz is already sealed, which is crazy because we're just 7 games in. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he makes it. Stranger things have happened for sure, but I think he gets 2 more years and he's out as well, because I don't think they improve. But speaking of that, Miami plays Pitt this weekend at noon, and we are going to Bay Cannon Brewery to watch that on Saturday. So my buddy Matt opened up a brewery in West Tampa. It's 2106 if you're in the Tampa area. We are going there on Saturday. They are doing a tailgate style cookout with bratwurst. I think the deal is you get a bratwurst and a beer for $7. Most of their beers are like $5-6 on the menu anyway. So, and it's a craft beer. It's not a White Claw or a Natty Light or something like that. Like it's a real beer, like an IPA or stout or kind of whatever you're looking for. But a beer and a brat for $7. Yeah, that is the best deal in Tampa. So we're going to be out there from like 11 to 2, 11 to 3, watching that first window of games.
The Ohio State, Wisconsin yeah, during that.
That was looking like it was going to be a good game. Game day was probably going to go there.
Right,
but
North Dakota State is so happy that Wisconsin lost because they get game day.
So disappointed. But because that game will probably be a blowout, I'll be more focused on the Miami-Pitt game at noon. Hoping that my Panthers can bring home a victory.
Your Panthers. Oh, are we jumping fan? You're just getting recruited to all the fan bases.
If you're a Pitt fan and you want to overnight me something before the game, I will wear it on Saturday for you guys' game. So really whore myself out there. So any other weekend plans for you this weekend besides that?
We got trunk or treat at our preschool on Sunday. We'll be turning the minivan into Candyland. But no, we're just going to watch football all day on Saturday. It's kind of nice to not have to worry about stressing about your team. It's Florida's bye.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to just watch other things happen and not, you know, not worry so much about that. But
well, I'll bring a 13-month-old after the brewery and over after
perfect.
The brewery so that you can stress about, you know,
about
your kids jumping on top of her and beating her up and stuff.
They'll toughen her up for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. Throw her off the...
Karen's going to be like, we're not having any more children.
We're never going back to those people's house again.
When you have this many kids, you just your level of tolerance for craziness is just really high.
Yeah, I was over last week, and Allie's kids were like jumping all over and standing on the table and standing on the counters and stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is everything? And Allie and Eric aren't even fazed by it. They're just like, this is a normal Tuesday. Don't worry about it. So
just wait till you have 5-year-olds. It is a whole new world. And you kind of, I think especially with twins, you have to look at whatever situation is more dangerous and go after that child. So then the first one gets away with a lot more than maybe they would if they were an only child.
It's tough to focus all of your
energy
on both of them.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, but knock on wood, we stay out of the hospital. We you know. We're good over here.
Yeah. How many more weeks to go for you?
I have 4.5 weeks.
We are getting close. By that time, we'll know where UF stands.
Right.
We'll know if FSU still has a coach. And we'll know if Miami is...
It is the week of Florida State.
Wow. And we'll know... Which, yeah, I think his fate will be sealed before
that
game. Anyway. And we'll know if Miami's making a bowl or not.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot.
A lot.
And, you know... A couple more lives being born in the world. So that's exciting.
That'll be a good week. Yeah, we will know if Florida's in the SEC championship game, which is
interesting. Last thing I'm going to say, we had a caller yesterday on Same Energy Sunday who calls in from London. We call him London Silk. he said that if Florida beats Georgia, he'll come to Atlanta for the game, for the SEC championship. And I really want to meet him. Like, he was supposed to come in for Orlando, but the schedule... getting switched, like, totally screwed him over.
So is this your way of becoming a Florida fan? Because then you can justify it.
A couple of things.
Wanting to meet London Silk?
I want to meet him. So the only way for that to happen is for Florida to win. And if Florida has a game the week after they play FSU, maybe they take their starters out in the third quarter like Dabo did too.
Yeah.
So maybe we, you know, maybe we're...
There's a great chance that
maybe
happens.
We get embarrassed by less. So... Again, not to... Okay, I just said some good things about you, Florida fans. I don't think Florida's beaten Alabama or LSU in that championship game, so it doesn't really matter to me. Like, it's just another chance to cheer against Florida. So why not? Go to the SEC championship game. I'm totally okay with that. I'm not going to wear orange and blue when I go to Jacksonville in 2 weeks, but if you guys win, I will not be upset about it for
unless
several reasons.
Unless the Gator fan sends him a t-shirt, and then, like you said, he'll whore himself out and
if
wear
it's a
it.
Cool enough t-shirt... Nah, I'm not doing it. Maybe the Trask one that Annie has out there.
Right.
Like, if you can do that in black and white so that I don't have to actually wear the colors of orange and blue, I'll wear that t-shirt. So if you can do that black and white, I'll wear it.
Well, and I will tell you, way too early prediction. If Florida goes, they don't beat Alabama, but they do beat LSU.
Ooh, I like it.
Which we have lots of weeks to talk about that. And obviously November 9th plays a huge role in what's going on there. And obviously the 2nd as well, because it'll either be Florida or Georgia.
In that game. For sure.
No.
Well, cool. Well,
all right. Well, this was fun.
Yeah.
Guys, make sure that you tweet us, you know, or whatever. If you still send comments on Facebook, you can do that too. But we'd love to hear your feedback. We want to know what you think of the show, if there's something you want us to talk about. I was kind of excited about the UCF question being tweeted to me just because I thought it was, you know, interesting and off-the-wall conversation. So, yeah, if you have something to say to us, let us know.
Yeah, you guys asking questions makes less work for us because we have to prepare less. So,
and really TJ, because he does the work and then just comes to my house and then I just talk. So do him a favor.
Yeah, so let us know if there's anything we can answer or talk about or laugh about or make fun of. And even if it's me or us or whatever. So, but yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll do it again.